Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 7-11, 11 minutes past 7 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. They're still talking about Donald Trump Jr. and his meeting with this lawyer from Russia. Remember, she was not a quote-unquote Russian lawyer. She, by her own admission, did not have any ties with the Kremlin. However, they are failing to mention another little meeting that happened with the DNC and people from the Ukraine. And what was this meeting about? This meeting was about digging up dirt on Donald Trump. So did the Democrats collude with the Ukrainian government to help out their own campaign and undermine the Trump campaign? Well, of course they did. Ukrainian-American consultant to the Democratic National Committee, Alexandra Cholpa, took it upon herself to investigate the connection between Russia and Trump when Trump tapped Paul Manafort, who had a long career in the Ukraine working for Russian-backed oligarchs. They always have to throw that that word in there, the oligarchs. Cholpa met several times with the staff at the Ukrainian embassy in Washington, D.C., to ask questions about Manafort, Russia, and Trump. The staff apparently shared their information freely with her and numerous American journalists at the time. They shared it with them as well. So if you take the word Ukraine, replace it with Russia, you take Alexandra Cholpa, replace it with Donald Trump Jr., you basically have the same story, don't you? You basically have the same story, but the left is completely, and the mainstream media is completely overlooking this because it's Hillary Clinton and the DNC. And of course, they can get away with everything they want to. They can get away with, you know, claiming that the Russians hacked into their servers. However, they won't turn the servers over to be investigated. They won't. I mean, when is the FBI, when do you get to slap the hand of the FBI? When they say, hey, we would like your servers. No, get away. You do not touch our servers. They've been hacked by the Russians. Can we investigate? No. Hands off of our servers. Hands off. When is the FBI, and then what does Comey and the FBI do? Okay. All right. We won't look into it. When does that happen? Ever in the history of Earth, when does that happen? Let's go to North Charleston and talk to John. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing, Charlie?
Good. What's up, bud?
It's bad when we've been given a gift by those guys from Europe, and you have your own people who don't like it and they want to tear it down.
What do you mean?
We've been given a gift of America, and you've got half the country who wants to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Liberal people.
Right.
I don't understand it. I'm trying to figure out what's so bad about the freedom that we've been given that people just want to give it away.
You know what amazes me? Don't you think it's strange, John, that all of a sudden, over the past couple of weeks, the folks on the left are claiming to be patriotic Americans?
And they're not.
And you're exactly right, they're not.
Every time, if you notice, and you've been around as long as I have, if they accuse you of something, that's because they're doing it.
That's right.
That's why they don't want nobody else in power, because they don't want everybody else to see what they're doing. And that's why they don't like Donald Trump and the other people that came in and with him, because they thought they had this thing wrapped up.
They were making all of their plans with one end in mind, and that was Hillary Clinton sitting in the Oval Office.
And look, and you mentioned something funny about the FBI. It's amazing the collusion that they did with the Clinton campaign.
Right. Yeah.
You know, where's J. Edgar Hoover when we need him?
Well, he's rolling over in his grave, I guarantee you that.
Where is he? I wish liberal white people and black people would think, what would the world be today without the United States?
It wouldn't be, well, first of all, we'd all be speaking a lot of German.
Exactly. What is so good about moving to socialism? I'm looking at all the great countries in the world, which is only one, and the economic systems. What is it that they don't like about capitalism? They think that everybody ought to be on the pacifiers of the federal government and that we can afford it. Look at Illinois.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, they can't afford what they have.
Yeah, look, I mean, if you go down and you look at Venezuela, you know what they're doing in Venezuela now? They are rationing toothpaste.
Are you serious now?
Toothpaste.
Now?
Yeah, it's toothpaste.
Charlie's toothpaste today, toothpaste tomorrow.
You're exactly right, John. You're exactly right. They'll be doing that. I appreciate you calling in this morning, buddy. You have a great day.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Good morning. It's 21 minutes past 7 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Glad to have you along with us on this Thursday morning as we get ready for the weekend. I know everybody is out there ready for this weekend. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. By the way, we are, a month and a week away from the eclipse. And Sheila went online just out of curiosity yesterday to look and see about hotel rooms here in Charleston for the weekend of the eclipse. And it looks like, for the most part, we are sold out. We are sold out. This is now McClellanville is actually going to be the last place in the United States that you can view the eclipse. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of people are going to be there. All of the major news networks are going to be here in Charleston and the Lowcountry. Reporting. I know they're going to be out at, I know NASA's going to be doing something from the College of Charleston, which is pretty cool that they're going to be doing that. And of course, one of the professors out there has put up a YouTube video on how to make a viewer for the eclipse. It's pretty inexpensive. He says you can make it for less than $20. But I think we got the glasses, those special eclipse viewing glasses, which are pretty cool. Now, I was kind of surprised a couple of weeks ago when we found out that scientists say, now there's a caveat to this, so listen to everything that I'm about to say. It is safe to look at the sun, according to NASA, it is safe to look at the sun when the sun is in the full eclipse, totality, they call it. When it's in totality, according to NASA, they say it's safe to look at it. However, that little bit of time before and after totality is extremely dangerous. I wouldn't risk it. I wouldn't go along with that. I would certainly wouldn't look at the sun at any time without glasses or some sort of protection. So I think that was maybe a little irresponsible of NASA to put that, even if it's true. Even if it's true, I think it opens you up to a great deal of danger, because when the corona, which is that ring of light around the sun, when that hits your retina, it's like a laser on the back of your eyes, and it could permanently damage your vision if you look at it for even a small amount of time. So anyway, there are some very safe ways to look at the eclipse, and again, we're talking about 5 weeks from now, as everybody's going to be checking out the eclipse. And it's going to be, it's going to be a long time before we have another total eclipse here in North America, especially of this magnitude. It'll be a long, long time. So this is a pretty much a once-in-a-lifetime event for a lot of people here, and it's going to be very interesting to see. So can't wait for that. That is going to be absolutely fantastic to witness, although it's going to be, a minute and 40-something seconds? So all of this hype over a minute and 40-something seconds of fun. I know, that sounds like a lot of you guys' honeymoons.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 7:40, 20 minutes until 8 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Glad to have you along with us on Thursday morning. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. We're going to be talking a little bit more about this lawyer that apparently the Obama Department of Justice gave special entry into the United States. She had originally been forbidden entrance to the U.S., but it looks like the Obama Department of Justice said, yeah, sure, come on in. We'd be glad to have you. Now, remember, I don't understand why what happened over the past couple of weeks where the folks on the left, these hardcore leftists like Bernie Sanders and Maxine Waters and of course, you got Dianne Feinstein and Chuck Schumer and all of those folks. When excuse me, when did they all become diehard flag waving patriots? I thought patriotism was a bad thing. Didn't it seem like to you just a few weeks ago being a patriot was a horrible thing, and now they want you to think that they are very, very patriotic Americans, and that they hate Russia, and they hate communism, and they hate socialism, and Russia is the enemy of the United States, and why are we, you know, yada, 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 and blah, blah, blah. When did that happen? When did the great switch happen to make you think that they are actually against Russia? Well, we all know they did not stand up to Hillary Clinton when she gave Russia 20% of our uranium stores. They didn't mind that whatsoever. They didn't mind when Barack Obama, remember that that press conference where he was telling that fellow from Russia that, you know, after I get reelected, I'll have a lot more flexibility. I'll have a lot more freedom to negotiate with you guys. They didn't mind that. They didn't mind the great Russian reset from Hillary Clinton. They didn't mind anything going on with Russia until John Podesta started or wrote in that email that they really ought to hit on this whole Russian thing. Now, all of this came from a dossier that was leaked by this guy named Steele over in Great Britain. He was a former, MI5 operative over there, and then he left there and decided to be a, you know, enter into the political arena. So he had information. So what's the difference? He had information, he said, that tied Donald Trump to the Russians. And also he had information, according to him, that, and all of this has been debunked, he had information that Donald Trump had sexual perversions that the Russians could use to blackmail him. Well, we all found out that none of that was true. None of that was true. In fact, they're saying now that this absolutely proves, this meeting that Donald Trump Jr. had with this this Russian lawyer says that this is the end of fake news. Here is Charleston's own embarrassment, Stephen Colbert.
One White House advisor admitted, the Russia story will get worse and worse, and you can't just really say anymore, fake news. So tonight, we bid a fond farewell.
We are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake. You notice now everybody's using the word fake news. Where did you hear it first, folks?
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff. It didn't happen.
Fake news. CNN, fake. Whoops, the camera just went off.
All right, so that was Stephen Colbert saying goodbye to fake news. But, oh, Mr. Colbert, Charleston's own embarrassment, I don't think fake news is over just yet, because we're going to find out a lot more about this Russian reporter. In fact, we have found out a lot more about this Russian reporter. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. So this woman, this Natalia Veselinskaya, the Russian lawyer, who apparently has turned out, seems more and more by the minute, seems to be a Russian spy. Who is this woman, and who was actually colluding with her? Now, we all know that everybody went crazy over this meeting, this 20-minute meeting. 20-minute meeting that absolutely nothing came out of. That is the proof now of collusion with the Russians, right? Okay, well, that's fine. Well, it turns out that Barack Obama and his administration met with this woman. She was a Russian lawyer. She worked, and they were trying to, she was trying to get into the United States. Now, she was not allowed to get into the United States, all right? So the Department of Justice came along, and they granted her a special, what they call a parole, to get into the U.S., okay? Now, this is all very, very important. All very important. A couple of days after this meeting that went on with Donald Trump Jr., this woman had her picture taken. Now, let me ask you something. Have you ever been able to sit front row at a committee meeting with the United States government. Have you ever been, anybody ever been in the front row there? Well, Miss Natalia Valinskaya was seen seated in the front row right behind former U.S. Ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, at the House Foreign Affairs Committee back on June 14th of 2016. You ever been to the House Foreign Affairs Committee, sat in the front row? No, of course you haven't. That's right. So now Ambassador McFaul publicly talked about this conspiracy story in the media and was broadcasted on that was broadcasted on MSNBC and NBC shows during the 26 campaign. Ms. Valinskaya was, like I said, denied entry, denied a visa into the United States in 2016. She appealed her situation to the U.S. District Court in New York. She got a parole letter allowing her to enter the U.S. on behalf of a client. So the affidavit to enter the U.S. acknowledges that she is working for, now here we go, you ready for this? She's working for a company called Fusion GPS. Now, this is a firm which was retained by Democratic operatives to develop opposition research on Donald Trump. And they also commissioned that phony Steele dossier that, what's his name, McCain, sent somebody over to England to get. So how deep does this go, and who is actually doing the colluding? Let's talk to Chris in Somerville. Chris, what do you think, buddy?
I tell you what, man, this whole thing has gotten so blown up. I'm just, it's like, I just can't believe it. I mean, this is going to fizzle like everything else, but they'll still push some kind of Russian narrative.
Right, they will, yeah. This.
I mean, I really don't know, and I'm going to tell you something. This is a sad statement I'm fixing to make,
mm-hmm.
but if Vladimir Putin came out and said something, and CNN and MSNBC said something, I'm believing Vladimir Putin.
It seems like it these days that he's more credible than they are.
These people right now would not be happy unless we nuked Moscow.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
I mean, they're pushing us. Vladimir Putin, after a while, is going to get sick of this.
So why would why would this lawyer from Russia want to help out the Trump administration or the Trump campaign when she attended an anti-Trump rally in Chicago?
You know what? None of this makes sense. I mean, none of it really does make sense. But I do believe Trump Jr. when he says that he thought they were going to be talking about one thing.
Yeah.
That at the actual meeting was something totally different, and he was like, "This is a waste of my time."
And that would have actually been illegal to discuss policy with her.
That's right,
Chris.
That's right. Trump
real
Jr.
quick
was not on the administration's team.
Right.
He wasn't. He was just a private citizen whose dad happened to be running for president.
There you go. All right, Chris, I appreciate it, buddy.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 8:12, 12 minutes past 8 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA. WTMA.com. Glad to have you along with us Thursday morning. My friend Mark Leon wrote an interesting article in the Charleston Daily. But before we get to that, I was headed over to James Island to go visit some friends last night at their lovely home over there. And as we were driving over into James Island, I'll tell you what, we live in it is such a beautiful area. It is absolutely gorgeous. And I know sometimes we kind of take it for granted because we see it every single day. But when you really step back a little bit, and look at it as maybe somebody coming here for the first time, the scenery that we have in a lot of areas here in Charleston is absolutely breathtaking. We are so blessed to live in this area. It's a phenomenal place, and we love it here. Love it here. But Mark Leon wrote an interesting article, like I said, in the Charleston Daily, and here's the title of the article: Top reasons Charleston is choosing tourism over basic resident livability. And I think Mark Leon makes some pretty good points here. I'll just outline a few of them. Number one, multi-million-dollar investment firms from out of state and locally are monopolizing on an opportunity to reduce the historic footprint and create a new hospitality center focused on boutique hotels, luxury stay experiences, and high-end shopping and dining. These investments range from a small group, from small to large, including a group of New York investors that purchased the building housing Blind Tiger on Broad Street and the new $100 million complex that is being planned for Spring and King. He goes on to say that old local businesses are being forced out or into retirement due to urban pressures and rising rents. We've seen that. Seen that with Hughes Lumber, Bob Ellis Shoes, King Street Grill, Morris Sokol. Limited, and this is a big thing, limited improvements in roadway and infrastructure. So are we now concentrating more on tourism than we are on livability? Now, like I said yesterday, this is one of the things that Mayor Tecklenburg ran on as a candidate for mayor of Charleston, and it was livability for the people here in Charleston. Mark Leone goes on to list the cost of dining and entertainment, 10.5% dining food tax, 15% alcohol tax, increased basic prices across the board, increases in prices of parking garages and more opportunistic valet options, corporate transitions of downtown Charleston, removal of the only neighborhood grocery store on the peninsula, there at the Northern Peninsula, poorly managed parking meter system and mass transit service, no monthly or annual subsidized parking for employees who work in downtown Charleston, limited enforcement of jaywalking laws, plus and thus increasing a risk of injury. So I think he lays out some pretty good points here, especially when he starts talking about, all right, so the parking for people that work downtown. I mean, that, you got to imagine sometimes that can be cost prohibitive for people working downtown. And a lot of folks will park down at the Battery and walk to work downtown. That may not be happening much longer because, you know, we just told you yesterday that they're looking at new plans for doing an upgrade for the Battery on the peninsula. And several of those new plans eliminate that parking. So where are you going to park? If you go downtown, you're going to have to park in a city garage. You're going to have to find a parking meter somewhere. You're no longer, if some of these plans go through, you're no longer going to be able to park at the Battery and enjoy that. So I think Mark Leone makes some pretty good points that maybe we are a little more focused or too focused on tourism. Now, I know that's a big part of the money that we make here, but is it taking away from the livability of Charleston? We don't want this town to be destroyed because we decided to concentrate on tourism rather than the quality of life for people that live here. In my mind, it's kind of like when schools really concentrate on the standardized testing and not the actual material that is being taught. I think we're looking at tourism and trying to win all of these awards and these accolades that we're getting, like Travel and Leisure just voted us number one in North America and number two in the world. Are we more concentrating on people on things like that than we are the people that actually live here? We need to really start thinking about the people that live in Charleston and the livability and the quality of life that we have here, probably a little more than we need to be thinking about tourism. Again, it's a fine line that you have to cross. We'd love to get your opinion on it.
WTMA. It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Good morning. It's 25 minutes past 8 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA. Let's go to Glenn out in Hollywood talking about livability in Charleston. Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Good morning, Charlie.
Yes, sir.
I think that Charleston's biggest problem is we don't have enough land to accommodate living and, you know, all the commercialism.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I've noticed, whenever the either Condé Nast or the leisure living, whatever, whenever they say, you know, this town is the best place to live in America.
Right.
I've seen it happen in Raleigh. It ruins it. And it just becomes so unbearable and traffic and everything else.
Well, Glenn, that's a great point that you made because they're not saying this is the best place to live. They're saying that this is the best place to come for a vacation.
Well, it still gets crowded.
Oh, absolutely, it gets crowded. I wonder, and I haven't checked to see where we fall on the list of best places to live in America recently.
Right, but the best thing I like, I live out in Hollywood, mm-hmm. but I work up in Mount Pleasant. Every time I cross the Cooper River Bridge,
yeah.
I look out over the harbor and say, I get to live here.
Right.
This is awesome.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a fantastic place to live. Glenn, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. But we've got to make sure that we keep it this way. And I know there's going to be growth, and I know there's going to be changes, but we've got to make sure that the people that live here, the people that could contribute to the community, that pay their taxes, that, you know, that really, because remember, the tourists aren't here. They're here all year round, but there are certain seasons. But we're the ones day in and day out that make this community as great as it is. And we've got to be looked after. I mean, certainly hope there's somebody out there looking after our best interest when we're stuck in traffic out on 17 or on Highway 61 or something like that. Or heck, you head over to West Ashley and you're stuck in traffic over there. We've got to make sure somebody's looking out for the people that live here. And and I don't want to say, and I know it sounds bad, but put the tourist aside. But we've got to come up with some middle ground to where we can say, all right, here is what we're doing to help improve tourism. But yet, here is what we're doing to make sure that this place is livable and comfortable and retains the reason that most people moved here. I mean, again, it was like Glenn was saying, you know, travel over the bridge there and take a look out in the harbor. We get to live in a place where people save up their money to come visit. And I think a lot of times we might take that for granted. You know, we've got beaches. You can head over to Isle of Palms and park for free. You can head over to Sullivan's Island and park for free. You don't get that just everywhere. In fact, we were at the beach down there at St. Petersburg, and you don't find free beach parking down there. You don't find free beach parking when you go, like we were up in Rhode Island visiting the beach there at Narragansett. I think that's right. Sheila will correct me if I'm not. But you don't get free parking there. So we've got a lot of great benefits to live in this community, but we got to make sure that somebody is out there looking in our best interest to make sure that it stays that way. And this is a great town, and I noticed this after I moved here. This is a great town for high-end shopping. It really is. But when you talk about just the average middle-class shopping and things like that, it really is kind of difficult. I mean, we're looking at the problems that the malls have, Northwoods and, of course, Citadel Mall. They've had their share of issues. But, again, we've got to make sure that the livability here in Charleston remains at a level where everybody is happy, I guess is the word I'm looking for. So we've got to strike some kind of a middle ground there to make sure that that everybody is, that livability is as just important as tourism here. Again, it's a fantastic place to live, and we absolutely love it, and we're very privileged to live in a place like this.
1250 WTMA.
Now, here's more of the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 8:38, 22 minutes until 9 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Glad to have you along with us on Thursday morning. Matt called in yesterday, and he was asking me about something that I was talking about last week that I really couldn't say a whole lot about. But and I, for some reason yesterday, could not remember what he was talking about. It was about an audition that I was doing. And I guess now I can tell you about it. I was up for a part, a role in a television series that was not, it wasn't like a recurring role. It was like a one-time thing for a television series that they film here in Charleston. It's called The Inspectors. So my agent sent me over this audition, and it was, I'll tell you what a stressful, that was so stressful. But did the audition and sent it in, And I've got news. Apparently, I didn't get the role. So that's that. That was it. That was that. So, but I really wanted it. It was one of those. I mean, it's just one of those experiences, you know, that that I wanted to have being a part of. And this is an Emmy Award winning show that is shot right here in Charleston. Again, it's called The Inspectors. It won a daytime Emmy not long ago. But man, I hope I get another chance to do another audition, because it's something that I really, really want to do. It'd be a lot of fun. Be a lot of fun. So I didn't get this one, but maybe I'll get another one. Who knows? All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Going to be talking more this morning about this lawyer who Donald Trump Jr. met with. And one of the things that the media isn't really asking some of these questions, because they don't care. Who leaked these emails to the press? See, all of this thing came about because somebody leaked Donald Trump Jr.'s email to the press. And then Donald Trump Jr. said, okay, well, here you go. You can have them all. There, you know, you want to do that? And he kind of headed that off. But Donald Trump has got to do something about these leaks that are coming from the White House. He's got to start firing people left and right when these things happen, because you just can't have that. It doesn't matter what it's about. It doesn't matter if it's about a meeting that Donald Trump Jr. had with a lawyer from Russia, or if it is a leak about what the president is having for lunch tomorrow. Leaks cannot be tolerated in the White House, and that's what the president absolutely needs to do. He needs to crack down on that. But there's so many stories about this that the press isn't covering. Why? Because it doesn't, some of them don't hurt the president. They hurt Hillary Clinton and Obama. I mean, what? And people like John McCain, who had this operative go over to England and get this Steele dossier that that has been rebuked and all of that. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Now, Lindsey Graham, he was questioning Donald Trump's pick to head up the FBI. Graham asked nominee Christopher Wray whether the FBI's investigation into Russian involvement in the 2016 election could be characterized as a witch hunt, as the president has said. Wray said, I do not consider Director Mueller to be on a witch hunt. Well, maybe not Director Mueller, but certainly the media is involved in a witch hunt. Wray was on Capitol Hill for the Senate Judiciary Panel screening. He was nominated by the president in June to take over the FBI job after the firing of James Comey. Senator Graham tried to corner Wray on whether Donald Trump Jr. should have taken a meeting with a Russian official. Not a Russian official. She was not a Russian official. She was a lawyer from Russia. She was not a Russian official. By her own admission, she had no ties to the Kremlin. This was not a Russian official, okay? Now, Wray said, I'm really not in a position to speak to that. He was not up to speed on the junior facts. So, pressed further, Wray went on to say, I would think you'd want to consult with some good legal advisors before you did that. She was not a Russian official. Graham additionally wanted to know what the obligation should be for anyone to inform the FBI when they're exposed to an effort by a foreign government to peddle negative candidate information during an election season. Oh, okay, so you're a private citizen, and you've got a candidate that you like, and somebody from Mexico or Canada or Paris says, hey, I got some really nasty information on you guys' opponent. You want to hear it? No, I better not do that. That wouldn't be right for me to do. What would you do? I mean, heck, if you're running for city council and you've got, and somebody comes up to you and say, hey, we got some information on your opponent. You want to hear it? Yeah, you want to hear it. Absolutely you do. You don't think Clinton did that with Ukraine when they were trying to come up with information against the Trump campaign? You don't think that? You don't think they sat down and listened to people? Come on. Come on. He went on to say, any threat or effort to interfere with our elections by any state or any non-state actor is something the FBI would want to know. All right, well, first of all, we got to describe or define what is interference. What is interference? Nobody is trying to interfere with the election. They were giving information, reportedly, about a candidate. How is that interference? Nobody is changing a vote. But even then, all right, let's even say their desire was to change the outcome of the election. Okay? What are campaign dollars for? What are campaign advertisements for? They are to change the outcome of the election. They are to influence the election. That's what elections are. You have to influence the voters to vote for your candidate. That's what elections do. So this whole ridiculous, and I'm sorry, Mr. Ray, I disagree. I think it is a witch hunt, and it's a witch hunt on the mainstream media, by the mainstream media, on the Trump campaign. But we're not hearing about that. We're not hearing that there was information leaked in this Steele dossier. Was that collusion? If so, John McCain's got some answering to do.
WTMA. It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Good morning. It's 9 minutes until 9 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Glad to have you with us. It's Thursday morning. Lots going on out there. Let's talk with RNC co-chair Bob Paduchik this morning. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Charlie, it's great to be on the show with you today.
Thanks. Glad to have you, buddy. Thank you very much for calling in. I'll tell you what, it seems like every day there's another story, another peg in this witch hunt over the president of the United States. What do you think about some of the stories that we're hearing this morning about this meeting with Donald Trump Jr. and that lawyer from Russia? Not a Russian lawyer, a lawyer from Russia.
Well, the thing that surprises me the most about this, Charlie, is the sort of double standard that mm-hmm. some folks in the media have when, you know, the DNC staff can go over to the Ukrainian embassy and meet with people over there to talk about and dig up dirt on candidate Trump and his campaign staff.
Right.
And not to hear a peep about it. It's really quite surprising. And look, Don Jr. didn't do anything wrong here. But you see folks in the media that have tried to spin this and many other issues up over the last several months to do everything to get this president to take his eye off the ball, but he hasn't.
Right.
He's focused on working hard for Americans. He's dismantling the Obama regulatory regime. Every day something and some new regulations or oppressive rules are being dropped out that allow businesses to grow and create jobs, and that's what's having the real effect on the country here.
Don't you think it was interesting that this story broke very shortly after we started hearing more about James Comey releasing classified information to his buddy at Columbia University with some of these memos? Shouldn't that be the big story of the day?
It should. It's really convenient for that to happen. I think it's also interesting, The Hill, publication here in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. reported today that this Russian lawyer that you were just mentioning, she received from Loretta Lynch special immigration parole to come to the United States last year.
Right.
And this isn't Loretta Lynch, Girl Scout. This is Loretta Lynch, you know, who, you know, according to James Comey, asked him not to refer to the investigation as a investigation. It's the same Loretta Lynch that met with Bill Clinton secretly on an airplane for 30 minutes while she was investigating then-candidate Hillary Clinton.
Right, but Bob, they were just talking about their grandkids.
That's right.
That's all
right. Because, you know, you can't call on a cell phone and have a nice conversation
yeah,
and check in with
that's
somebody.
Right.
You have to go through the security for the attorney general. You have to go through the security for the former president and coordinate all that. I'm sure it took them more than a few hours to get that thing set up.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk a little bit about health care. What are we going to be hearing from the Senate on this health care plan that we're looking at?
Well, it's fascinating to me the kind of the standard that's put on Republicans here. I'm sure you remember that the Democrats spent 13 months building this monstrosity called Obamacare, and you never really knew what was going to be in it until it was passed.
Right.
You know, the famous words of Nancy Pelosi, we've got to read the bill to know what's in the bill. I mean, what's happening over the last couple months here, and you got to remember that we've just been at this for roughly 6 months or so, Republicans have had an honest and serious debate about what we're doing about major components of our health care system in terms of providing coverage, and more importantly, improving the quality of coverage and reducing the cost and the burden on this. I mean, there are people that are spending 30, 50, 100 times more in premiums because of Obamacare. And depending upon what state you're in, and take South Carolina, for example, 45% rate increase in Obama Marketplace. In some of these places, there's canceled coverage. You know, next year, if you're on Obamacare, you have a 4 in 10 chance of only having one choice. That's not a choice.
You're right. One choice is not a choice. It's a mandate.
Right. And there's 20 counties in my home state of Ohio where you don't have any providers.
Mm-hmm.
This system is so bad, you know, insurance companies are fleeing from it, and Democrats are sitting there with a smile on their face. Now some of them are starting to admit that there is a problem with Obamacare, like this is some big revelation that we haven't seen over the last 8 years as this program has deteriorated and raised costs and created so many problems for people in our country. But they're, you know, the radical left has taken over the Democratic Party. So they can't afford to compromise. They can't afford to work with Republicans on this. And part of what you see, really, is a debate that's taking place just in the Republican Party because only Republicans are willing to try to fix this problem. And so it's going to take some time. I have a lot of confidence that Mitch McConnell is going to get this done. I mean, people underestimate him, I think, too often. And I look back at it and thank him every day that we have Justice Gorsuch on the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Because
we're talking we're talking with Bob Patuchik, co-chair of the RNC. Now, what about the argument, you know, that some people are making, and you got to give a little bit of weight to this. You know, the Republicans had 7 years to come up with a health care plan. Why didn't they have something ready to go right out of the chute when President Trump was elected?
Well, it's a dynamic situation when you're taking that vote. You know the President Obama is going to veto it. Then you know it's one act. Mm-hmm. You know, last year at this time, if you'd asked me, I'd have said we'd have had a President Trump. But there are probably not a lot of Republicans in Congress that thought that would be the case.
Right.
There were probably, you remember, a lot of Republicans in Congress that were worried about keeping the majority in the Senate or the House and where that would leave us on things. And so not everybody necessarily had the confidence that this thing was going to go the way it did. Now, I knew just based on how the crowds and the support that we're getting on the ground in Ohio that we were going to win Ohio, and I figured if we were going to win Ohio, we had a good chance of winning the whole thing, and obviously we did. So I think that's part of it. The other part of it is when you sit down and you start doing this thing, and when I grew up, my dad fixed all our cars. We did all the mechanics on our cars. Now you open a hood now in a car, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Yeah, I think my car has a liver.
Yeah, well,
it's that complex.
If mine did, it would be in distress, that's for sure. But the situation is, I think they looked at all the problems in Obamacare and realize how complicated it is and how much it's how much has to be done to get it fixed. And, you know, what are the consequences of taking this action and doing this action? And look, think about this for a minute. We're having real honest conversations now, basically about entitlement reform as we're dealing with health care.
Right.
And as a conservative, I look at that and I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful on this president's election. I'm hopeful on the things he's done to roll back the regulatory regime here. I'm hopeful on how the economy's responded. And, the House got it done. I'm hopeful Mitch McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate are going to get done because there's just too much at stake here.
Yeah, you said a lot of people didn't have have confidence that we were going to have President Donald Trump. I think around 9 o'clock on November the 8th, a lot of people were starting to be extremely surprised at the way that was going. We appreciate it. Bob Paduchik, co-chair of the RNC, thank you very much, buddy. I hope to talk to you soon.
Will do, Charlie. I look forward to getting back to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.